ဟုတ်ကြည်တယ်ဒီနေ့မရင်ဒီဒီနေ့နေရောဒီဒီနေ့ဟောရရဖြစ်မလို့သမတ်တို့ဒါလို့ဆင်ဆင်ကြီးတွေပါလို့တူတွေပါဒီနေ့ရောဆလာသွန်တိဝတိရောကျောင်းဒုတော့ကျောင်းမှာသွန်ဟောတဲ့တိကျတဲ့ဒီနေ့မှာတော့ကဂေါနေမှာကြီးချက်ပါကြောင့်ဒီချက်တိမှာကောကွလာတောက်တိမှာကောင်းတော်တော်ကိုချင်ဖို့ကြည့်စိုးစားတီချင်းချင်းဟောတဲ့ချက်တိဇံပြေကတတိကြည့်စိုးရင်သူလိစုံတွေ့အောင်မှာချောင်းလိုချောင်းရင်စာရီစံရောချက်ဖင်းနေရောသူသမဟိုကြီးဒမ်နောတေအောင်မှာကြောင့်ဒီနေ့ဟောကြီးခြလာပဲသေးနာဟိုကြီးလူခင်ကွန်းကြီးကမှာကြီးရင်းကြံဖို့ကြီးကကြီးကြောက်ကကြောက်တော့ချင်ဖို့ကြီးမှာရှင်တော်တော့ဘုံထွက်တင်ပြယူမိကြီးမှာရှိကြည်ကျွန်တော်တို့ကရီကြီးကိုစသည်ငင်းငမန်းတဲ့ကြီးကခပ်ဆိုရရင်စီတန်တရအောင်တင်တဲ့ကခပ်ဆိုရင်ဝကြည်တန်ရံပုတ်ကြီးကတင်ရရှိနေခပ်စွာကိုစွန်တွကြည့်ရောရင်တွင်ဒီတောင်းမေပချဘန်တို့ရည်တင်တဲ့ကိုစွန်တွကြည့်ကြွရရင်နငိမရဒီကဒီတော့ကြချင်ပေါ်ရင်ပဲရင်သူနောက်စွန်တွကချောင်းမှန်သူစံရောနောင်ဟာဖေဟောတဲ့တင်ရကြီးနေတဲ့လူစံစံအတကြီးကတောင်းပုတ်ဒီလူစံစံကြီးဟောတဲ့တော်ရီတလူစံစံစံဒီဟောကြည်အတမွန်တဆောင်လူကြီးကြီးပါတိတို့
So this after the first 3 years were, completed, were finished, but without any great results, Arya Sangha tried to leave the retreat but returned back. She remained for another 3 years, hoping for some results, for some signs of attainment, but again there were no signs. So at the end of 6 years, he felt that this was not leading anywhere, and he decided to leave his retreat place. And as he got up and he was ready to leave, he noticed one particular formation on the face of the rock. So there was this area where there was a little bit of a drop of water dripping from above, and these small drops of water had caused, let's say, a basing down again, a very smooth surface onto the rock. And he looked at that and he said, if a small drop of water can cause, this change into the form, into the face of the rock, me who should have such determination and such great aims, how can I possibly abandon without having achieved anything? How can I abandon my practice? So back he went for another 3 years into retreat. The 3 years went by, so by now we're on the 9th year, and again there were no signs of attainment. And by that time, Arya Sangha was really fed up, so he said, that's it, I'm leaving this place. He started going down the mountain, and as he was walking down the mountain, he noticed one man who was working there, and he seemed to be working very hard, and he was very absorbed with his work. So he thought, how strange, I should go and have a look. He saw this man, and next to him there was this mountain of metal, of iron. And this man was sitting there just holding a needle in his hand. So Arya Sangha said, what exactly are you doing? He said, well, I started with this huge mass of metal, and I just, with a small file, I worked on it, so I just produced this one needle. And Arya Sangha thought, well, this person, he did all this massive work just to create one needle. Me, who have such a great goal, such a great objective, how could I possibly lack in enthusiastic effort? So back he went into the retreat, where he remained for another 3 years. So by now we have reached the 12th year of the retreat.
ဝင်ကြည့်တဲ့ဒီနေ့မယင်သူတင်ရလူကြီးကြီးပါဒီဒုဒတင်ဤလူတော်ကြောင့်မကြောင့်ရင်သူဒုကွန်ကိုချင်တော့ပါရီချင်းဝဒတင်ဤယူထုံးနေတဲ့ဒီဒါတောင်စကြီးကိုဇတိလာဖေကိုဝင်သူဆံဖေဘနမ်တနာဝင်ကြည့်တဲ့ချမို့ကြီးမှာတိုတီကြီးချမွေးနဘန်တော်ယူတင်ကြီးမေတိချတော်မှာမကစောင်းနေဝဒမကံကလာမှာဘုကမှာရောက်တယ်မိကျင်တဲ့ကြီးမှာတေးစုဘချင်းကျင်နေညချင်းချင်းဖို့သိမဲ့ပါကြီးမှာထောင်းဝဒညချင်းချင်းဖို့သိမဲ့ပါကြီးထောင်းနဲ့တဒီချမွန်ကြီးဘုဒ္ဓမာဇနန္ဒချကန်ဒီသစ္စနာလဘကမှာစန္နာဘုဒ္ဓယောချွန်ကြီးတော်ကဒီချမွန်လာနုကန်ဒီသံနဲ့ teni yin ji la ji sir ji pa ti ji na ji yar na o da ne te go ka le go ma ba ti ya no ne go wen ti ti ga go o da ne sa ti ya ro wa ti ga ti ya so na ba ti shin do go ti ga go ne ji ki la sha ni sha ji sha ka ji ji ti ta na o ji da ba ti ne le ya ti ya zhen da ge long wa yin na ba la no do go ti go ne da ja ge ji go le ge yan nya ba ji yang ji ji ja ge le ya la Tozu mazo bandawa ji china, chen thumna, or that the nil and as a do triamia ji, the nijit shamba monsum the shelter, or that in regaloji.
At the end of the 12 years, there was still no sign of attainment. So Arya Sangha said, that's it, I'm putting an end to this retreat and I'm abandoning this meditation place. He left the cave and he walked down the mountain, and he was about to reach the nearest village, and just at the outskirts of the village there he came across a sight that he found very disturbing. There was an old beggar, a woman, and her body was completely covered with wounds, and the wounds were filled with maggots who were feeding on her flesh. And Arya Sangha felt very moved, and he thought, you know, I can't allow this to happen. This woman is tormented by the maggots. I need to remove the maggots. And then he thought, well, yes, but if I remove the maggots, I still have to provide for some sort of nourishment for them, because it would be unfair to deprive them of their meal. So immediately he started cutting off pieces of his flesh to prepare, let's say, to prepare a place where he could move the maggots and they could continue to feed. And then he started considering how it would be best to remove these maggots, because he thought if he were to do it with his own hands, because their body was so soft and slender, he thought, you know, I might crush them, I might cause them some unease. So he said, I couldn't possibly pick them up with my hands. The best way to pick them would be with my tongue. So having prepared the flesh, he thought, I'm ready now to pick up the maggots from the wounds of this woman, of this beggar. And although he had generated this incredible boundless compassion, both for the woman and the maggots, he still found the sight a little bit repulsive. So he closed his eyes as he was leaning forward to pick the maggots up with his tongue. And as he was doing that, the more he was pushing forward, the more he couldn't find the woman, he couldn't find the maggots. And finally he opened up his eyes, and there it was, Buddha Maitreya, right in front of him.
ဟုတ်ကြည့်တယ်တင်တယ်ရင်တယ်တင်တယ်ကိုဒါသူဒီဒါအန်ဒီချင်းမှာကြီးမှာရှိသွားရင်သူဟုတ်ကြည့်ဒါသူဒီနေနှောင်းကြခင်ဒါတင်ဒီရဝေရှားကောင်းကျင်ကြီးတောက်ဖူးကြည့်သူကျင်းချမ်းပါတက်ဒီလို့သမ္မာတိကျောင်းမှာကြောင်းရဲ့သူကြွတီချွတ်တော်ပြီးတောက်ကံကြီးလာရှင်ဆောင်ကြီးပါရှာချနာကြီးပါရှာပါရောက်ပြီးတောက်စေပါဇူးနီငွေစွန်တွေ့ချောင်းဝညာမြေသာတောက်ဒီလို့ဆုံးငါရင်တော့ ยองติมาจองนี่ชื่อตองบะลาบะชะตุจีตอเสบะละซูนี่เนี่ยยองงาจันโลสมะตะบะนี่ตองมาจองตองมาจองยิงงาจันชีวะลาบะมะกินโบชิกะรีวะรันจันบุจะกะชีจันะโควิดคับชีจันะยูติงาเรคัมตะตองเนี่ยจองโหชีชีวิเนี่ยชะบะพะระบันตะตะบะละกังกันตะตะตะตะตะตะตะตะตะตะตะตะตะตะตะตะตะตะตะตะตะตะตะตะตะตะตะตะตะตะตะตะตะตะตะตะตะตะตะตะตะตะตะตะตะตะตะตะตะตะตะตะตะตะตะตะตะตะตะตะตะตะตะตะตะตะตะตะตะตะตะตะตะตะตะตะตะตะตะตะตะตะตะตะตะตะตะตะตะตะตะตะตะตะตะตะตะ ຈະຈະຈະຈະຈະຈະຈະຈະຈະຈະຈະຈະຈະຈະຈະຈະຈະຈະຈະຈະຈະຈະຈະຈະຈະຈະຈະຈະຈະຈະຈະຈະຈະຈະຈະຈະຈະຈະຈະຈະຈະຈະຈະຈະຈະຈະຈະຈະຈະຈະຈະຈະຈະຈະຈະຈະຈະຈະຈະຈະຈະຈະຈະຈະຈະຈະຈະຈະຈະຈະຈະຈະຈະຈະຈະຈະຈະຈະຈະຈະຈະຈະຈະຈະຈະຈະຈະຈະຈະຈະຈະຈະຈະຈະຈະຈະຈະຈະຈະຈະຈະຈະຈະຈະຈະຈະຈະຈະຈະຈະຈະຈະຈະຈະຈະຈະຈະຈະຈະຈະຈະຈະຈະຈະຈະຈະ chevara gondi, chen, zamdi, jagji longa na chumo mebar. Yidin shamgon, tenpi sarvara njani, ne chemaya chi dhokka chak, ngarji mbejaan di manchi. Kishar chatan, jarabu yupon, don yuti di, kumma, kumma bav, si ngay tetam drakjaan, shar matombe, tuji re, chanshi yeshu di, shen chapsari, jitan ji, thayi jarabu, charpabjaan, chitao sondi. Liji dhubin, thongwa manchi, nga takta choji chongta, nishanpa yin,
Oh, Rinpoche was just reading out the part of the text was describing these attempts during the 12 years of a retreat. And finally, when Arya Sangha directly met Maitreya, of course he had this complaint, and he said, "Where have you been for all these 12 years?" And Buddha Maitreya said, "I was there next to you right from the beginning. It was only due to your karmic obscurations that you couldn't see me. I was there since day one." And after that, Buddha Maitreya said to him, said to Arya Sangha, "You know, I can, in order for, you know, for your sake, in order for you to generate faith and to understand this whole issue of karmic obscurations, I think it's a good idea that we proceed together into the village." And the text continues by describing actually the perception of the villagers of what they saw. And it is said that from the whole population of the village, almost no one was capable of perceiving the form of the Buddha. No one could see Buddha Maitreya. Most of the people saw a meditator walking, or a man walking around carrying a piece of meat in his back. There was only an old woman who looked at it and was able to perceive Buddha Maitreya. And also it is said that there was a beggar who noticed that there was something unusual, there was something extraordinary in that. And the biography continues by saying that these two beings who were capable of perceiving the reality or the way things were, they generated incredible concentration. They completed the training of their concentration and they proceeded along the path very quickly. And after Arya Sangha was capable of directly perceiving Buddha Maitreya said, "Okay, so now what are your wishes? What would you like to have now?" And as I say, Arya Sangha had already great interest in studying the Prajnaparamita text, but some of them were very difficult, and especially the ones dealing with the hidden meaning of emptiness. So he said, "Well, I would really want to have a, you know, some private teachings on the Prajnaparamita, if possible. So straight away, Buddha Maitreya led him up into the pure land of Ganden, where he had the possibility to have those teachings exactly according to his wishes in the most, you know, precise and clear way. It is said that the time that Arya Sangha spent up in the pure land was anything between 25 and 50 years of earth time, but in their time it was something like 5 days. And during this time he studied thoroughly those Prajnaparamita texts, and within them we have this collection of five texts, five topics, quite difficult topics. And from that onwards the biography continues with a deed of composition that followed after that, because Arya Sangha, having received these teachings later on, he sat down and he put it into paper. Ramsey continued by giving us the transmission of the remaining of the biography, that especially the part that refers to the composition of various texts. Now, further down, the biography is actually dealing with a particular event, an anecdote that happened to Arya Sangha, and it has to do with the local authorities, let's say the Indian king at the time. Now, this Indian king was actually actually doubting whether Asanga was an Arya or not. And he said, I've heard so much about this meditator, I've heard so much about this being, and some say he's an Arya, but I really doubt it. So the king decided to put Arya Asanga through a test. Now, it is said that the land where the test took place must have been a place where the earth was really dark, really black. So what he did is he dug into the earth and he put a certain amount of white earth under the black one. So this was going to be the first test. He was going to ask, what is below my earth, or what color is my earth? And the second test that he decided to take through Arya Asanga was that he took a golden vase, and within he filled completely the golden vase with filth, the most unclean substances. But then on top, he poured a little bit of honey. And he thought he would approach Arya Asanga and ask him these two questions. What lies beneath my earth, and what do I have, what do I carry in my hands? And he said that he had decided in his mind, if he can give me the right answer, then I'm going to acknowledge him as an Arya. And of course, you know, the examination took place, and Arya Asanga probably passed the test.
Ori da jinda chi dan da deni di yugo na yon chi do jin zen du du chi ndig ndig di da de ren sam de la ni ya ho ji da deni da ngi de shu gwa di ma ba thong mi ko wa da sa de nga dong de so ne ten ju mo do jin de sham ju de ngi de wa ma bu de no yu a yin du de la bi chan ni yin ba dong ho ji da thong nyen ni dong ne ojig thaba jimbo da sham ju de ngi no ten go thaba jimbo jil la mi ojig da thaba jimbo jil la ma yin ji le wa nga na tu na ji wa di ti no ni da da ri ji yin ji da di so di nyama de yer ma ji ga di so ma da yu wa mi char ji no ne ti yin ju da ti ren la le wa dang bo di cha song da sa ma ri di le wa dang bo la ba ji cholo ga ja dang tu ji yer ma ji wa di ti yin du o da kon ta jang ji da ཁྱི
Right, Ramji says that there is a little bit remaining in this biography, but we will not continue with that. Ramji has decided to stop here for tonight, but just to give you an idea, the reason why we spent the first session discussing the biography and the deeds of Arya Asanga is because, you know, he's the one who wrote down this particular text, Uttara Tantra, the sublime continuum of the Mahayana. Now, looking into this particular text, the text is made up of five chapters, but mainly, of course, here the teachings that were requested were teachings of the first chapter. Again, it is questionable whether we have time to fully go through the first chapter. It is made up of 160 verses, and it is quite elaborate. Now, the main subject that we are dealing in these texts is what is called the seven Vajra categories. And in the beginning of this, the first three of the seven Vajra categories is the three jewels, Buddha jewel, Dharma jewel, and Sangha jewel. And the fourth one is actually dealing with Buddha nature. And mainly this first chapter is dealing with this potential, this Buddha nature.
ཨོཇི་དེ་དེ་ནེ་ཡན་བ་ཡན་དུ་དེ་དུ་རྒྱི་ནི་དང་གནང་ནི་ཁོང་ཅ་བསམ་དེ་ནེ་ཁམ་དེ་བར་ཇ་བ་ཉན་ཝོ་རུ་གམ་དེ་ཡེ་དེ་དེ་ལེ་བ་དང་བུ་ཇུ་ཅ་ཡན་དུ་ནི་དང་གནང་ནི་དང་བུ་ཡེ་ཨོ་དེ་དེ་ནེ་དེ་བ་དེ་ཡོ་སངྒི་གོ་དུ་ཅེ་གོ་ཡོན་དེ་གནང་ཅ་ཨོ་ཇི་དེ་ནེ་དུ་བ་དེ་ནེ་དམ་བ་ཐམ་ཨ་དེ་
So actually within the first chapter of the text we find a presentation of the Buddha jewel, the Dharma jewel, the Sangha the Sangha jewel as well as the Buddha potential. And after that, in the remaining chapters, we find the remaining three of those Vajra categories. So we will deal with enlightenment, which is the resultant state. We will deal with the qualities of the Buddha that are actualized, manifested at this resultant stage, as well as the enlightened activities of a Buddha. These three categories are dealt in the remaining chapters. We will not really be looking at those. Rinpoche said, although, as we say, we will start with the proper explanation of those first four of the seven Vajra categories tomorrow, it is a good idea to give you just a brief explanation of the three jewels. It is important to understand that when we talk about the Buddha, the Dharma and the Sangha jewels, this can be seen or can be understood at the time of the cause as well as at the time of the result. And when we talk about the three jewels at the time of the cause, actually we talk about an understanding of how it really works, how do we come to the point of actualizing such a state, such a result. And first of all, we need to understand the qualities and we need to set the attainment of such qualities as our goal. So at the time of the cause, we can contemplate about the qualities of the Buddha and we can understand that these qualities of the Buddha come through an understanding of the Dharma. And here we talk about a realization of the true path and the true cessation. This realization exists in the continuum of Arya beings and of the Arya Sangha. So right from the beginning, from the time of the cause, one could be contemplating what is the state, the resultant state and how that is achieved. So it is important to understand that those who have become Buddhas, you know, the future Buddhas, what they're doing right now is they're looking at the past and they're examining the Buddhas who have already come into this world. And they say, look at those Buddhas, how they became enlightened, how they realized the Dharma, how they developed these realizations. So if I set them as my, if I turn my attention towards them, if they become my goal in the future, I will also reach the state where I'll become the Buddha jewel. And at that time, within my continuum, I will have a perfect realization of the truth of the path and the truth of cessation, which means that at that time, I will also manifest, I will also actualize the Dharma jewel, and by doing that, I will be qualified to be called also the Sangha jewel. So this is how these states are attained. First of all, one understands their meaning, one sets them as a goal, and one proceeds along the path and goes through the five paths and eventually reach the resultant state. So having explained the, very quickly, having given you these principles relating to the three jewels, it is also important to give you a very short introduction of the fourth of those seven Vajra categories, which is quite important. It is called potential, or the heart, or the essence of the Buddha, or Buddha nature. So we're using different terms for that. There are a number of verses actually dealing with this category, but there is one verse that actually is very good. It's very it describes this one in a very precise way. And it says, all embodied beings are said to always possess the heart of the Buddha, because the body of a complete Buddha pervades all, because thusness is undifferentiated, and because they have Buddha nature. So actually, in this particular verse, there are three reasons that are given to establish why all sentient beings possess this essence or this potential.
Jala Gisam Ji, Gisam Ding only Divaji Jaya, Divaga Rukon Jama de, given Divu in Bayandu, Givala, Givadi, to Jimmy Jimmy the Manjama, Monji Sanji, Sanji Mudan, Sanji Muga Triva, Kangarawaji, Chushi, Chushi Bala, Tene Ranjala, Chushi Badi Langan, Tana, Givaji Jama in Givara, Tana Penaji, Mazu Machiko, Kalam Chambuji Sayana, Nishibuji Kuayana, Or you could say,
So first of all, this verse says that all sentient beings, they possess at all times this potential, this special quality, this ability to develop fully into Buddhas. And it says the first reason for that is because the body of a complete Buddha pervades all sentient beings. And here when it talks about the body of a complete Buddha, it's actually referring to the enlightened activities of all Buddhas. And Rinpoche started by giving a broad example here. And I was saying, you know, every time that we have a pleasurable experience, we have to look at the cause of this pleasurable experience. And the cause of that always has to be virtue. And this virtue is generated by something that has to do in relation to the Dharma. Let's say listening to the Dharma, practicing the Dharma, and so forth. Even if we look at very mundane or very ordinary experiences, such as, for example, enjoying a good meal, enjoying a good sleep, or enjoying a nice conversation, having heard something nice, something pleasant, the pleasure that comes from that is actually a result. And this result is the result of virtue. And this virtue has to have been established sometime in the past, and probably it was established with relation to the Dharma. So at some point in the past, one came in contact with Dharma, one listened to the Dharma. Maybe one was not fortunate enough to directly meet the Buddhas and receive the teachings from them, but nevertheless one can come in contact, let's say, with a continuum of teachings. And by listening to the Dharma, one gets inspired, one engages in practices, one engages in activities that generate virtue, and in the future that virtue generates pleasure or bliss and so forth. So you can see that actually the enlightened activity of the Buddha, which might have happened, you know, many, many years before, and you might think that it did not directly involve you and so forth, they spread out. And the first reason that establishes that we do have this potential is the reason that says that the enlightened activities of the Buddhas, they spread out, they pervade everywhere. Enlightened activities of the Buddha are said to be like the rays of the sun. You cannot stop the rays of the sun from pervading the whole space. They go everywhere. So the first reason that establishes that we all possess this Buddha nature is the reason that says that the enlightened activities of the Buddha, they pervade everywhere, they spread everywhere, right, like the rays of the sun, and eventually they will come in contact with us. The second reason, as presented in the verses, it says because vastness is undifferentiated. And here, vastness, the term vastness, of course, refers to the term emptiness. It's another word for emptiness. When it says it's undifferentiated, it means that emptiness exists for every phenomenon without distinction. Emptiness, in a sense, this essential quality of emptiness is the same for every conventional phenomenon. No matter how diverse things are, they all possess this nature of emptiness. And finally, we come to the third reason, where it says, because we all have this Buddha nature. Now, it is important to make a distinction here. When we talk about Buddha nature, we can actually talk about two natures. One is the essential nature, and the other is called the developing nature. When we talk about the essential nature, we talk about the essential nature of our mind. In other words, we're talking about the emptiness of our mind. And when we talk about the developing nature, we're talking about that thing that transforms, that develops within ourselves. Now, sometime before, Amsha was talking about the process of developing one's wisdom, of going through the stages of hearing, of reflecting, of meditating, and gradually developing one's mind. As we said, sometime in the past or sometime in the future, one will come in contact with the teachings. One will hear the teachings of the Dharma, and eventually this will have an effect on one's mind. It will bring about certain transformation. And it is very much like having, first of all, a seed, and allowing the seed to grow, to develop, providing the seed with the necessary conditions of the earth, the fertilizer, the water, the necessary temperature. And little by little, you will see this hard seed cracking up and sprouting. And after it sprouts, it will grow, it will develop, it will come and open fully like a flower. So this thing, you know, this whole process of transformation shows that there is a potential for such a change. This is a developing nature. Right, so as I said very quickly today, I gave you an idea of what these seven categories are about. As we say, the first chapter is dealing with the first four of these categories. The first three are the three jewels, and the fourth one is this important potential. They are explained and presented in the text in a very extensive way. We have to say there are many analogies, there are many examples that apply to the potential, and of course also the three jewels are presented in their own way. They're subdivided, the presentation is subdivided in different parts. We only have 7 days. In each day we have a session of 2 hours. So, Rinpoche says, I doubt that we will have the time to complete this first chapter. There is quite a lot involved in that. And Rinpoche's idea is to spend these 2 hours every session as having an hour and a half of teachings and then having the last half an hour for questions and answers. Just looking at the whole schedule during this month, not only do we have teachings on the Anuttara Tantra, the Sublime Continuum, but also we have a few days dedicated to a presentation and a commentary on the King of Prayer, Samantabhadra Prayer, and also there are 2 days that will be dedicated towards receiving the great generosity empowerment. Rinpoche thinks it's appropriate to stop here for today. Let's complete by offering the short mandala, and this will be followed by the usual dedication prayers.